This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everyone. It's Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio Show. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Broad Radio every Tuesday night at 8:55 to 9:55 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or by going to our website on thepeoplespeakradio.com. There you can listen live to shows or to our past shows on our iPod Ready Archive section. We've got a couple of new ways to listen, and we're really excited about it. And join us on, and you can join us on our programs. You can now listen on your smartphone. Isn't that cool?
We've got to do it here.
I have no idea how to do it. You may also listen to our show every Tuesday, Eastern Time, by calling.
But he could hear me just fine, but I couldn't hear him.
I can hear you just fine, Edward. How are you, Edward?
Oh, yes, okay.
You can't talk when I'm talking, Edward. You're supposed to do it my way. Edward Jones is an incredible human being, and I'd like to believe that he's a good friend of mine. I've known Edward for quite a few years via the Internet, and it is a pleasure to have you with us on the People Speak Radio, Edward.
Thank you, Bethany. Pleasure to be here as well.
Wait a minute. Let me tell you, let me repeat that. Edward, it's nice to see you, but man, I'm so tired. It's been a hell of a long day, and now, you dummy, what do you think about my transformation?
That sounds exactly right. Exactly right. I like it.
So we did it, huh? You know, you've had a very interesting life, Edward, and your style is. Can you tell us just a little bit about a brief synopsis of the history of how you came about to your new consciousness? And tonight we're going to be discussing Edward's new book, The New Consciousness Born, You Are the Source. Can you tell us just a little bit about exactly how you came to this revelation of transformation?
Well, I call it a death and a birth into a new consciousness, Basma, meaning that there was suddenly a death of myself and then a birth almost instantaneous from that, and my entire life, well, what I call transformed right there, and the way I walked, the way I talked, those things that I knew all disappeared. Everything that I knew actually disappeared. I had to relearn to walk, relearn to talk, and that was 31 years ago. So I've had a little bit of experience doing it, and I have been speaking of it ever since, and shocking people, and angering people, and perhaps hugging people as well.
A little bit. You do a little bit of all of it. When you say you went through a death, you literally died. But a lot of people will say that, well, I died and I had this afterlife experience or near-death experience. Do you consider that same type of near-death experience?
Well, if there is a near-death experience, then perhaps there can be a white light or a light at the end of the tunnel, or perhaps a God to send you back, or St. Peter, or what have you. But those would all indicate that the mind was still thinking, that thought was still there. So that obviously would have not been a death experience. So the distinction that I draw is, in a death experience, there's no thought, there's nobody there to see a white light. There's no spiritualness. There's nothing. Although to say there's nothing sounds strange, doesn't it? Because that actually means there's nothing. So there wouldn't be any thought, wouldn't be any life in the form, if you will, to see any other thing other than death.
So there would
it sounds strange, doesn't it?
No thing
right.
would exist.
Exactly.
Let me ask you something, Edward. Prior to this event in your life, and it was an event, did you have any inclination? Did you have any understanding of spirituality and how that whole genre of people thought, or was this just something that you had never engaged in?
It was something that I had never even touched, never spoke of. I wouldn't have known what any of this kind of thing would have been. I was a restaurant person and living my life in a robotic sort of way without knowing it. So I went from there to being the source of everything that I say. In other words, there's been no study, there's been no guru, no Bible, no anything to, let's call it, instruct me. There's simply been, that's why the name of the book is A New Consciousness Born, You Are the Source, because if we take our information from other people, then obviously the information will be distorted because it would then be coming from memory, either recent memory or even memory of thousands of years.
Mm-hmm. And now your world consists of nutheads and robots.
Well, I really don't know what to do to speak with people. I guess you could call that a wake-up call or two before when you mention to someone. You find out a whole lot about someone if you say, well, you're a nuthead, because you find out if they have any openness at all. If they have an openness, they might look at you a little bit shocked and say, well, what is it that you would term a nuthead? In other words, they might ask to go into it a little bit. But if there's a closeness there, if there's a, let's call it a robotic reaction, would be, well, you're an idiot, and shut up, and I'm going to go, and it would be anger and door slamming and cursing happening. I've seen a bit of that, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I know you have, actually. You talk like that, but it's in an endearing way that you speak of these people. You don't dislike people, do you, Edward?
There's no animosity whatsoever. If you listen to the manner in which I let's say you're a nuthead, then you might even hear it as a hard-headed person as opposed to some sort of a slight. I don't have the ability to cut anybody down. I do have the ability to speak truth with them. It's my guess that this world, well, perhaps more than a guess, that our world is the way it is because we have to keep secrets. We can't call the heavyset person heavyset or fat. We have to lie about it. We have to be polite. You know, we have all these rules and regulations, and we were born into them. It's not like we set them for ourselves and then adhere to them. They were set for us by our parents, and of course they were set for our parents by their parents, and it goes on back and back and back. My question is, when will we break the chain of parents who didn't know how to raise children?
You know, what I'd like to, you know, when you said that, and I know in the book that there was actually an occasion for you to call someone out as being fat. And it was hurtful at first. And there was an element of defensiveness. And all of these things, the defensiveness, the retorts, oh, you don't know, the excuses. I know you have specific words that you deal with your life, and you have used it. You have come to work with a specific genre of terminology that doesn't necessarily fit the dictionary terminology. How do you deal with ego?
Well, the way you dance around it, to make the short answer is, on this planet, you have to dance around people's egos because they have built themselves a place where they're very special. And they've built themselves a place where they're, let's say, 50 pounds overweight and they're not fat. And they've built themselves a place where they know everything. So only with utmost caution can you move around an ego. So when you address an ego, let's say, by saying perhaps that it's a nuthead or even perhaps, I don't really particularly care to speak of the fat thing because there might be a fat person listening, and I wouldn't want to hurt anybody's feelings, you know. But if you can't speak directly, if we can't speak directly with one another in that sort of a way without the ego interfering, then our possibility of ever making it on this planet is about 0%, I would say.
I would think so. Let me ask you, Edward, why did you actually create a new glossary of words?
Well, Basil, I've been doing this for 31 years. I have been speaking in person wherever I could, and for the last 11 years here on Pal Talk. And even right way before, I wrote that glossary of words in 96. And it was mainly because people couldn't understand, people couldn't catch what it was that I was speaking. They just would look sort of glassy-eyed. And I realized that they and myself were using words that perhaps there was no meaning for, or better said, they were not well-defined words. So I took a group of, well, you've probably read it since it's in the back of the book. There was a book plug there. Did you catch it? The 60, what is it, 60 words. And they were, I put them there
in
a manner.
Them, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's 60. It used to be 61. The last one was fit and to go, but most people didn't get that fit and to go one. So I took it back out. At any rate, it meant to say that this is the manner in which I'm using these words, because the discovery I made, which was pretty huge at the time, was that this is a planet of people who speak with one another, and they don't know what they are saying themselves. In other words, the person speaking doesn't know what they're saying, much less the listener. So I defined words in the manner that I use them so that I could be clear with myself. And suddenly I realized that there was one person being clear with himself. So I just assumed or took it from there that if I could be clear with myself, perhaps another person could catch what I was saying. And it even happens occasionally that someone does.
So this one I found very interesting. Your definition for the word happy, a feeling, path of sad.
Yes, I wonder if you would notice in your lifetime, you're kind of young to notice these kinds of things, but have you ever noticed that when happy is there, sad isn't very far behind it? Much like when pride is there, shame isn't very far behind it. They
well,
are illusionary. Go ahead.
No, well, I know that in Khalil Gibran, one of Khalil Gibran's books, The Prophet, he says that joy, sadness is in equal measure to joy. And that kind of reminded me of that when I read it.
Yes, yes, yes. If you can actually hear what is being spoken here when it's suggested that happy is half of sad, then perhaps the pursuit of to be happy would end. Would no longer care to pursue happiness, and perhaps ecstasy could show up in our lives then. But as long as we are pursuing happiness, then suddenly, and without warning, sadness is going to arrive. And if that happens too often, then the next logical step would be depression. So depression would be the moving up and down like a yo-yo between happy and sad so often that you finally get depressed about life in general.
Edward, do you consider yourself transformed?
Well, that's for 5 years after this experience when I consider myself having died and born new, or born myself new, or self-born, however you care. It's hard to even put that statement in an order in which it can be understood or said. But after about 5 years of going to workshops and looking around on this planet to see if I could find what had happened with me, it was even, suddenly I was walking different, talking different, suddenly the violence was gone from me, suddenly I was speaking in ways that I had never spoken in 36 years. My son said I had one father for 12 years of my life, and now I've got a new one, another, a different one. And I read a book one time from a fellow named Krishnamurti, and he talked about an experience called transformation, which he explained was when the old consciousness, or not necessarily old consciousness, when the ego dies, is it possible to live without an ego on the planet? And he called it transformation. So I sort of, if you will, borrowed or stole, whichever you want to, borrowed, whatever the phrase would be, from that phrase from him. It was either going to be a mutation of the mind as my explanation or a transformation. And the reason I say that is because any explanation pointing to an experience is a lie, because it has to come from memory in order to explain it. So I couldn't answer your question and say directly yes, because it's an explanation of what happened, not what happened.
Not what happened. Very interesting. For those of our listeners that have just joined us, we are talking with Edward Jones, author of The New Consciousness Born, You Are the Source. And if you have any comments or questions or would like to speak to Edward, you can dial into our show by calling 415-762-1161. That's 415-762-1161. Edward, there's something here. Let me say this. I know for a fact that you do it different. You do spirituality or this transformative process differently than most people. And it's honest and it's fresh and it's clean. And it's not harmful. Even in your honesty, I never sensed a sense of harmfulness. One of the things that I find very interesting is the part in your book when you speak about being something 100%. And I think that a lot of the gurus often dance around this topic because I think they believe that it may be very offensive to people to hear or sound even a little bit crazy when you say you cannot be loving, you must be love. You cannot be happy, you must be joy. And can you talk to us a little bit about being 100%?
Well, it's probably something that this entire planet avoids because they look ahead of what's going to happen. What will happen if I'm I've had many a person say, if this was a transformed world, it would be boring because there wouldn't be anybody getting killed. The lion would lay down with the lamb, all of these things, and so it would be a boring world. But what you just said gave me a perfect lead-in to explain what I say about transformation and what other folks might have to say about it. It's a whole different conversation, Basim, if you are speaking from the place of being transformed. If you are living a life of transformation and speak from there, it's a whole different conversation. The conversation then, if I may borrow some of your words, the conversation then becomes clean, it becomes new, it becomes virginistic, because it's coming from a place that's never been before. In other words, it's a new consciousness. And so many people breeze over the word a new consciousness. Now, new for me, if you look in the glossary of words, for me, new means never having been before. It means that it's not been on planet Earth before. It means finally something new is on planet Earth. It doesn't mean a new religion or a new Cheerios or a new cornflakes, and it doesn't mean a new baseball team. It means a consciousness that has not been here before, a consciousness that has no violence included. You led me into that beautifully, by the way. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I was trying.
Well, you didn't try. You actually did it. If you look in the glossary of words under trying, actually trying is impossible. You cannot try.
Now, you know, you and I have gone round and round about some of this. And
we have been around the mulberry bush, for sure. In conversation.
In conversation.
Yeah.
And one of the terms that I've often heard you use, and I would like to discuss it briefly, is crashing domains. I love that. Crashing domains sounds exciting, sounds thrilling.
Well, it can be quite confusing. Actually, if you talk with blind folks, they'll be able to explain crashing domains quite easily. I guess the simplest manner in which to describe it is when you describe a happening, for instance, something that's mental, a mental happening, for instance, jealousy or anger or something, and then you see if you can make that work in a physical area. You know, in other words, you take it from the psychological area and you put it into a physical happening. Well, the moment you do that, you've gone from one dimension of activity, which is psychological, to another dimension of activity, which is physical. And that would be crashing domains, because in order to do that, you have to be like a bull in a china shop. You go crashing right through, not realizing that you have left the domain, if you will, of psychologically or mental domain, and you've gone into the physical domain. So that's what I, at least that's what I mean when I say crashing domains. You go through two dimensions of life without realizing that you have. Is that clear?
You know, there's a couple, well, kind of, because I have thought about those things myself, and I have written about this. And one of the things that I've always said is that there are some people that will go crashing into the light, and some people will be dragged kicking and screaming. So I don't know.
Well, that's a little different from a little different, but the one crashing would be a little like that in knocking all of the. Well, there's two different things really there between what you said and what I said. I guess there's probably pluses to both things. If you're talking, did you say into the light?
Crashing into the light.
Oh, okay, yeah, well, that's a little different, but okay.
Well, I can see that it is a little bit from your explanation, and who's right, Edward?
Well, you cannot possibly be right.
The Dalai Lama. Who's right? Which one of you is right or righter?
Well, there's no such thing as right or wrong at all. There are consequences, however, but there's no right or wrong.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree. That is something that I've always... and how do you recognize the truth, Edward?
Well, it's if you're talking about the truth that you live, then it's in your life. So you recognize the truth by telling a lie, and you can hear the hollowness in it. You mentioned earlier that when you have conversation with me, perhaps you've experienced some freshness or some newness. There cannot be freshness or newness in a lie. So if there's a bit of freshness or newness there, then it is then the truth. The truth is so simple and so easy, because it means to say, do we speak the truth in our lives, or do we lie? The problem is that on this planet, we have about 6.5 billion folks who lie.
And I think it's pretty easy to witness lying. I don't have a problem witnessing lying, and I see it for what it is. But but in most cases, I think the lie is that they don't know that they're lying. Or they're not accustomed to the fact that they're lying. And because of that, I feel no animosity towards anybody that would lie to me unknowingly. I don't have a problem with that.
Without their knowledge, for sure. However, who's responsible for the awareness of when they lie or when they would speak the truth? So if you hear a lie spoken, whose responsibility is it to correct the lie?
Interesting.
Of course, that would perhaps
cause some... Whose responsibility is it? I don't know.
Well, if you're in conversation with someone, it would be each person's responsibility for both their own and the other person's, wouldn't it?
If there's no differentiation between the two, yeah, I would suppose that would be exactly. I would be responsible in either case. It doesn't make any difference, really.
Right. Well, a true conversation only works when we speak with one another rather than at or to one another. If we're speaking at one another or to one another, then... It almost makes no difference about the lie or the truth or all of that, because it's just
Wait a minute. That means you're chipping away at my soapbox. I like my soapbox.
Well, stand on it then.
I probably will, all alone. This is wonderful. For most nutheads, thinking produces and maintains all of their values, beliefs, conceptions, and identity. For all of that to go away, it would be a terrifying prospect. I absolutely agree with you. Edward, you know, we have a world that's deeply divided and deeply polarized these days. And one of the things that I've always said, or I've always thought, is that we hang on to things because the alternative is far too frightening. Because if we accepted things as they really were, we somehow feel like we're obligated to do something to fix it or to change it. Do you find that?
Not only that, Vixie. Can you tell I'm used to speaking with Vixie?
Oh, that's all right. We're used to our cyber language.
Exactly. If any of us are over the age of 4, then we have figured out how everything is. And we know how everything is, so it's just a matter of completing our life, if you will. And we then know that we know everything. So we go through life with a bit of a, what I call a nut head, a hard head, that it's almost impossible to get things through because we've given our life to learn what we have and we don't want to give that up. So if we could find a way to allow the other person a space in our lives, this world would be entirely different. But most people walk through or run through or ride through life the only person in their space. There's no one else in their space but them. They don't realize that there's a few others around.
Very interesting. We have a couple of questions from some of our listeners. Valerie in Australia says, saying there's old and new is creating two sides all over again. Is it not?
Well, I don't know if it is or not. If there is a new consciousness and there is an old consciousness, then did we create it all over again? In other words,
is there really old or new? Is there any differentiation? Or is it all the same and a constant consciousness?
Well, my suggestion is that for a few thousand years, who knows how many thousands of years, we have been a violent entity. We have killed, we have maimed, we have murdered, we have wars, we have world wars, we have wars that aren't considered world wars, Vietnam wars, Iran, Iraq, all of the nonsense happening. And that's a function of a violent consciousness. It means that the entire consciousness from which we live is violent. If there's a consciousness born, then, finally, that we have been perhaps waiting for forever, that has no violence in it, would we then call that the same consciousness as the consciousness that kills, maims, and murders? Or would it perhaps be a new consciousness?
How do we stop this, Edward?
Please?
How do we stop what? The violence.
We drop belief. Do you realize that our entire planet is being guided by belief? Even belief is even larger than religion, and religion is huge. But the word belief is far larger than religion, or far larger than anybody's God, or anybody's Allah, or anybody's anything like that. Because only out of belief can come all of the things that we fight over. Do you see? I wonder.
Well, I mean, I see. But is it really belief, or is it the lack of belief that we are the source? I mean, obviously, you've written a book called A New Consciousness Born, and you are the source. It would lead me to believe that you believe that we are the source, that we are the only. Now, which brings me to another thing, and I'll bring that up in just a minute. My mind is like all over the place. But
I can tell. You're running.
As the source.
Okay, can you just leave it there for a moment? If we are the source, then where are all of our beliefs? If we are going to be the source of our lives, then the first thing that has to leave us, or the first thing we have to dissolve or look the other way from, would be our beliefs. We would then no longer believe all of the things that we have been told. Do you see? Then we would have a new world to bring forth. But as long as we are doing all of the things that we've been told and believing all of the old things that have brought forth our world, our wars, and our killings, then we'll kill and we'll have wars. So it's no small thing that I'm talking about here.
No, it isn't, because at the point of believing that we are the source, we also have to believe that we are the causation of these killings and these wars.
Yes, but there's no... You see, if we believe that we're the source, then we are right back in the same pot of soup. We have jumped out of the fire, or the, what is that old saying? Jumped out of the frying pan into the fire or something? We cannot fall into the trap of believing that we are the source, because that would just
so
be another belief.
So we just have to be the source.
It's a function of being that which we are becoming. If we just could become or be what it is that we are, and right now we are a violent planet. Would you agree at least to that particular statement that our planet that we live on is a planet of violence?
150% I agree with that.
All right, so then if that's the case, how many folks do you suppose on this planet are violent in some form or another?
All of us.
All of us, that's it. That's what I talk about when I talk about 100%. Only when you reach the point of 100% can we begin something new. Until then, we'll just beat the old drum. Until then, we'll all just have excuses as to why we are the way we are. We'll say, well, my God said to do this, or the other person says their God says to do that. So then we go to war to find out who has the best God. But what about if we are the source of peace on earth? Then we would have to find peace within ourselves. We would have to find peace with our husband and or wife and or children or whoever it is that we are in relationship with. Even you and I would have to be peaceful with one another.
Oh,
that
no,
would be a big
I
one.
Can't have that.
All right, let's quit. It's impossible.
Well, you and I always did argue about something or another. I mean, half the time we never even knew what we were arguing about.
Yeah, but that's because you're so argumentative, you know.
Well, you know, that's what I do. That's what I do. That's why I got a radio show.
Exactly. I wasn't surprised at all to hear that.
And that's why you wrote a book.
Yes, yes. Finally, after 31 years, it took 31 years to write that book, and now there it is.
Well, I have to tell you, you did a great job, and it was. I have to also tell you that it was wonderful, in that it was not just a book about telling people; it was an interactive dialogue, and I really appreciate.
Well, really, that's the only way that true conversation. If you pick up a book and it's all somebody preaching at you, it's probably nothing new in it. Other than just long dialogues and long conversations, but in that book, it's as you have experienced, it's live conversation, so it has its energy going through it. Although I must say that people have told me it's a difficult book to read, and anybody that reads it will be challenged. Anybody that reads it, their belief is going to come right up in front of their face, and they're going to have to take a look at themselves. So there are some you could call that downsides, I guess, because. The devil is going to be facing you, so to speak.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. When I first started my own search for trying to understand what the heck was going on in this world many, many years ago, what I found was that I had an element of selective perception that I would fall back on whenever I read something that affected me on a personal level. And I'm sure that we've all done this, where you've read the same paragraph over 24 times and still don't know what the heck you read. And what I found was that when I forced myself to understand and comprehend what I was reading, it was always because it's something that I did not want to look at.
Yes.
And that may be this truth that people are unwilling to face. Edward, you take everything from us as a human race. You take all of our excuses. You take all of our everything. You take it away. You break it down. You strip us of it, and then you tell us, okay, now you can create everything that you want. That means I have no more excuses.
Exactly. And Vicki, the thing about that is, when when everything is taken away, and indeed it does do that, the book does do that, or you do that towards, with yourself, because it's an interactive book if you read it in a manner without thinking about it or without being attacked. The book will attack you if you feel like, if you're in attack mode, by the way. But if you can read it like that, it literally takes, as you said it, it takes your life away from you, and it leaves you nothing to hold on to. Which is huge, because that means that you'll be in the unknown. That means you'll actually have transformed your life. And that means you will be the source of your life. It won't be, it won't be some guru telling you or some God telling you or some Jesus or any book. It won't be even
or
a book.
Or even some Edward Jones telling me.
Or even, because there's nothing about Edward Jones there that you need to follow. There's only conversation about you in your life and how it is that you get along with your wife and your children and how it is that we raise our children, how we ruin them by the age of 4, and all of those things. They're all in that book. I say it's the most impactful or powerful book on the planet today, but then again, who wrote it?
Edward Jones.
I might be a little prejudiced, yes.
You think?
Maybe.
I'll tell you what, I happen to like this book, and I think it was great. And as I said, the fact that it was an interactive dialogue amongst friends and followers. There, you have a great following. And,
well, it was all done on PowTalk too.
And it's incredible that one of the things that people talk about is your candor. That and again, as they said here in the book, some people have actually accused you of just being mean spirited, and. But I've never seen that. Well, no, that is a lie. I have never felt that. I have never felt a mean-spirited. I have.
Well, the only thing that means is that you have not been mean-spirited. The folks that do that do not realize that they are analyzing and/or observing themselves when they have those sorts of comments about me. They can only see in me the things that are in them. So if they see them in me, they can be pretty sure of one thing. Maybe it's in me, but they can be darn sure that it's in them, because if they see it, it has to be in them.
What about feelings? What about our human feelings? What do they mean?
They mean that we're robots. Only a robot would have feelings. If you can be angered by a word, or if jealousy is part of your life, then obviously you're not the source of your life. Language is the source of your life. Thinking is thinking you if you can be upset by language. So I'm saying you should be able to be called any name in the book and what makes the difference. That's just somebody calling names, if you will.
And the human condition, I'm tired, I had a long day. All of these are just excuses that we use?
Well, maybe not. If you've been working extremely hard all day, then probably the thing you're going to be that evening is tired.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a function of the body. That would be what I would call crashing domains, to go from anger to simple tiredness. Unless, of course, you've been loafing all day and you come home and say, well, I'm tired, so you could get out of whatever it is that you're facing. But that's another whole story. Get out of the honeydews.
I'm tired. How about I have a headache?
I don't know about that one.
We have a question from one of our other listeners. Mike in California asked, did Edward have a religious background, and has he tried to relate what his transformation to the transformations experienced by other founders of other religions?
Mike, that's a perfect question. It's my guess, and I must use the word guess here because I don't study or read other folks. I just hear what people tell me. But it's my guess that of every religion that's ever been invented, brought forth, that is on this planet today, the beginnings of that religion was in an actual transformational experience, an experience of someone dying to their own ego, someone dying to this world, which is another way of saying what happened to me. I died to this world. The problem with that is that when people begin believing that and following that, then a religion, perhaps called Christianity or Catholic Catholicism or any of the religions, can be born of it. But the moment there's a belief about it, then the experience itself is dead. Hopefully I answered his question, but he's not here to find out, is he?
Well, he's a nuthead anyway, so I wouldn't worry
yeah.
about it.
All right.
You know, I'd like to go through a couple of these words with you, Edward, that you have in your glossary, just because I've always been fascinated by your usage of the words. And I have to tell you, according to you, a woman is a figment, an image, a projection.
Exactly.
What does
that
mean?
So is a man, by the way.
What does that mean?
Basma, I had to fix the Vixie real quickly there. Basma, if you ask, let's say, 100 people in your radio show what a real woman is, how many answers do you suppose you would get?
100.
That are the same, 100 different ones. And the same with a man. What is a real man to you? If you ask 100 different females what a real man is, how many different answers would you get? 100 again, so obviously. But if you, now this is going to a little, we'll keep it clean, we're on the radio, but if somebody's standing in front of you and you wanted to be 100% certain of what they are, whether they're male or female, then that's provable, isn't it? You can prove it right there on the spot, obviously, by disrobing. So that's real. But to say that you're a man or a woman, that's a figment. It's a figment of your imagination. There isn't any such thing as man or woman. But there is such a thing as a male and a female. Even if the person standing in front of you might happen to be of the persuasion of gay or lesbian, still you can tell by observation if they're willing to disrobe whether they're a male or a female. So everything I base on my observations on has to do with what is real. What is real? Not what does this world teach us, but what is real.
Well, this is one that I absolutely believe is true. Try. A reason to fail. Always trying, never doing.
Exactly. Yeah, the trying is a real easy one because it's impossible to try to do anything. You can't. I could ask you to try to put your foot on the ground, and you could not possibly do it. The only thing you can do is either put your foot on the ground or not put your foot on the ground. But the word trying is used so many times by failing people. They say, well, I tried. It's even a song. I tried, but I just couldn't do it. Or if you first succeed, try and try again. If you're going to continue trying, you're going to continue failing. So that was an easy one.
Very easy. Edward, you've got a new publishing house. Can you tell us a little bit about Ophidophilus and why you chose that name?
Well, I can't tell the exact story exactly as it happened, but Ophidophilus was, I was asked a few times what planet I was from, and as a joke I said I'm from the Big O, the planet of the Big O, assuming everybody would get what the Big O planet was. Well, no, but the people didn't get it. So finally they were asking me, well, what planet is the Big O? And I, oh, man. So I just made up the name Ophidophilus. And so when it came time for a publishing company, we chose the word Ophidophilus. So it's a planet. So you go to Mars and you turn right, and it's the third planet down there on the left. Did you see it when you were there?
No, I see that's the planet. But you can see the planet of Ophidophilus. Well, that's good.
Exactly.
The publishing company, I wish you well and great success with it. I think that's wonderful. I mean, not only did you publish a book, you created a whole company. I think that's wonderful.
Well, it's a book that challenges people so at such a high level that there's probably very few people that can pick the book up and read it all the way through and not be crying sometimes, upset sometimes, laughing sometimes. It's not an easy book to read, I've been told by some people. I don't know. Where it was easy for me to read it, I wrote it. I read it for 31 years.
I don't think it's easy to get to know the inner workings of who and what we are, is it?
Exactly. Once, if there's a mechanism by which to hold a mirror up, then everything we see we're not going to like. But it's the things that we don't, as you so well put earlier in the conversation when you said that so many times you would read something that could be beneficial to yourself, but you read right on past it, or you ignored it because that was the thing you didn't want to hear. So in that particular instance, this book is perfect for people because if they'll read it, it's going to put out there in front of them all the things they don't want to see.
Well,
that's a pretty good way to sell a book.
It's scary stuff when you first start, especially, do you think it's a little bit overwhelming for a newbie?
It probably is. There's two sides to it, Basma. The one side is if it's completely someone, let's say like I was up until age 31, never heard of these kinds of things. I wouldn't have known who or what a guru or even from the standpoint of, although as a child I was a Sunday school teacher, but I just had zero knowledge of these kinds of things. And somebody like that to read it, it would be a bit of a challenge for them. And the other side of it, if it's someone that studied these things for many, many years, then they're going to be sure I'm wrong because they already know everything. So there's two things that are pretty interesting about this book that would be interesting to see what happens with it.
Well, I highly recommend it. And for those of you that didn't hear, the book is called A New Consciousness Born, You Are the Source. Edward has a discussion room and group on Pal Talk Radio. I mean, it's a Pal Talk website, and for those of you interested, you can look at our site. Edward, what would you like to leave our listeners with as far as transformation is concerned?
Well, it would seem to me that transformation is the thing that needs to happen prior to our relieving ourselves from the responsibility of living on this planet. There's been all this talk about the 2012 thing, whether there's going to be the end of our world. And it's my guess that it's going to be the end of the world in 2012 as we know it, because we're going to be transformed, because we're going to end this murdering. We're going to end these world wars. We're going to end the fights in the religion of between the religions and the fights between the countries, and we're going to live in a transformed way. A real live human being would not kill another human being for any reason whatsoever. And that's where we're heading, a new world, a new consciousness, a new way of being.
Well, that's certainly a beautiful thought, because I never did quite understand how we were going to cure wars if we still hadn't learned the value of an individual human life.
Well, that's where that book comes in, because it cannot happen unless it starts with each one of us. And if you'll notice the subtitle of the book, it reads, You Are the Source. So unless there's going to be the I don't really care to use the word commitment, but I'll use the word commitment from each one of us to take a look at who and what it is we are inside, but not look at ourselves through our own ego to discover our personality, not like some of these nut-headed personality tests, but to actually look from the standpoint of real to find out what it is that we are, what is it that makes us tick, what it is that causes our anger, what causes our jealousy. Unless and until we can do that, the wars are going to continue. So that's where this book, I say, is perfect for everybody. Was that a good book plug?
On the back of the book, and I'm going to read this quote, the space for transformation of our planet has been created. It is called self-transformation. From there, the evolution of a new consciousness will emerge. You Are the Source by Edward Jones. Go out and get the book. It's a great book, everyone. And you can hear Edward live on Pal Talk. Are you there every day, or...?
Basically through the week, most days, yes, up until Saturday and Sunday. Used to be 7 days a week for 10 years, but I slowed up a little.
Well, we'll cut you a little slack. It's
damn
been a
wimp.
Pleasure, Edward. I'm very proud to have you on the show, because I happen, as I said, to consider you a friend. And I know, don't say it, Edward, I'm a nuthead.
You're a nuthead.
What do
but
I know?
There's 6.5 billion more of you, so feel good.
I'm not alone in the world.
Exactly.
Well, thank you all very much for being with us tonight. Go out and get the book, A New Consciousness Born, You Are the Source by Edward Jones. Edward, thank you very much. Our guest next week is going to be Hedy Epstein, who is the Holocaust survivor. And I'm looking forward to discussing some things with her. We have many mutual friends. It's been wonderful. Have a great night, everybody. And never forget, let the people speak.
Bethany, thank you as well.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the city wall, by the relief of fast, I saw